Chapter 47. Vets are useless creatures. Parasites on the agricultural community. Expensive layabouts who really know nothing about animals or their diseases. You might as well get Jeff Mallett the Knacker Man as send for a vet. At least, that was the opinion frequently expressed of the Sidlow family. In fact, when you came right down to it, just about the only person for miles around who knew how to treat sick beasts was Mr. Sidlow himself. If any of their cows or horses fell ill, it was Mr. Sidlow who stepped forward with his armory of sovereign remedies. He enjoyed a godlike prestige with his wife and large family, and it was an article of their faith that father was infallible in these matters. The only other being who ever approached his skill was long-dead Grandpa Sidlow, from whom father had learned so many of his cures. Mind you, Mr. Sidlow was a just and humane man. After maybe 5 or 6 days of dedicated nursing, during which he would perhaps push 1/2 pound of lard and raisins down the cow's throat 3 times a day, rub its udder vigorously with turpentine, or maybe cut a bit off the end of the tail to let the bad out, he always, in the end, called the vet. Not that it would do any good, but he liked to give the animal every chance. When the vet arrived, he invariably found a sunken-eyed, dying creature, and the despairing treatment he gave was like a figurative administration of the last rites. The animal always died, so the Sidlows were repeatedly confirmed in their opinion, vets were useless. The farm was situated outside the normal area of the practice, and we were the third firm Mr. Sidlow had dealt with. He had been a client of Greer of Broughton, but had found him wanting, and moved to Wallace away over in Mansley. Wallace had disappointed him grievously, so he had decided to try Darrowby. He had been with us for over a year, but it was an uncomfortable relationship because Siegfried had offended him deeply on his very first visit. It was to a moribund horse, and Mr. Sidlow, describing the treatment to date, announced that he'd been pushing raw onions up the horse's rectum. He couldn't understand why it was so uneasy on his legs. Siegfried had pointed out that if he were to insert a raw onion in Mr. Sidlow's rectum, he, Mr. Sidlow, would undoubtedly be uneasy on his legs. It was a bad start, but there was really no other available vet left. He was stuck with us. I had been uncannily lucky in that I had been at Darrowby for more than a year and had never had to visit the farm. Mr. Sidlow rarely called us up during normal working hours, as, after wrestling with his conscience for a few days, he always seemed to lose the battle around 11 o'clock at night. He made exceptions in the case of the occasional Sunday afternoon, and it had always landed on Siegfried's duty nights. It was Siegfried who had trailed out, swearing quietly, and returned slightly pop-eyed in the small hours. So when it did finally come round to my turn, I didn't rush out with any great enthusiasm, even though the case was just a choking bullock and should present no difficulties. This was when a beast got a piece of turnip or potato stuck in its gullet, preventing regurgitation of gases and causing bloating, which can be fatal. We usually either relieved the bloat by puncturing the stomach, or we carefully pushed the obstruction down into the stomach by means of a long, flexible leather instrument called a probang. Anyway, they had realized they couldn't wait for days this time, and by way of a change, it was only 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The farm was nearer Broughton than Darrowby, and lay in the low country down on the plain of York. I didn't like the look of the place. There was something depressing about the dilapidated brick buildings and the dreary setting of ploughing land, with only the occasional mound of a potato clamp to relieve the flatness. My first sight of Mr. Sidlow reminded me that he and his family were members of a fanatically narrow religious sect. I had seen this gaunt, blue-jowled face with the tortured eyes staring at me from the pages of history books long ago. I had the feeling that Mr. Sidlow would have burnt me at the stake without a qualm. The bullock was in a gloomy box off the fold yard. Several of the family had filed in with us, 2 young men in their 20s and 3 teenage girls, all good-looking in a dark, gypsy way, but all with the same taut, unsmiling look as their father. As I moved around examining the animal, I noticed another peculiarity. They all looked at me, the bullock, each other, with quick sideways glances without any head movement. Nobody said anything. I would have liked to break the silence, but couldn't think of anything cheerful to say. This beast didn't have the look of an ordinary choke. I could feel the potato quite distinctly from the outside, halfway down the esophagus, but all around was an edematous mass extending up and down the left side of the neck. Not only that, but there was a bloody foam dripping from the mouth. There was something funny here. A thought struck me. Have you been trying to push the potato down with something? I could almost feel the battery of fittering glances, and the muscles of Mr. Sidlow's clenched jaw stood out in a twitching ridge. He swallowed carefully.
Aye. We've tried a bit.
What did you use? Again the rippling jaw muscles under the dark skin.
Broom handle and a bit of hose pipe. Same as usual.
That was enough. A sense of doom enveloped me. It would have been nice to be the first met to make a good impression, but it wasn't to be. I turned to the farmer. I'm afraid you've ruptured the gullet. It's a very delicate tube, you know, and you only have to push a bit too hard and you're through. You can see the fluid collection round the rupture. A quivering silence answered me. I ploughed on. I've seen this happen before. It's a pretty black outlook.
All right, Mr. Sidlow ground out. What are you going to do about it?
Well, we were at it now. What was I going to do about it?